tego domku dziwnie w słońcu śnią. Jakby ci oczy przechodziły łzą.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong to make this land our home. If I
One thing, in fact, we can just see there, just let me stop by saying we see President Trump there wearing a skull cap, a kippah, in fact, as it's known in Hebrew, being taken to the Western Wall by the ultra-Orthodox rabbi in charge of the location. Clearly he's been asked to look at text as such, explaining the importance of the wall. What is also very interesting for viewers is the fact that he's actually standing with his wife, because men and women are actually separated in front of the wall, and clearly we can see that they're not right in front of the wall, they're quite a few metres back in a general common area. And as I was saying earlier, this is an area almost crammed full to its brim with both tourists and Jewish pilgrims. And Doug Herbert, our international affairs commentator, as we were saying earlier, this is a very controversial side trip to make. In fact, his administration got into a bit of hot water in the last few weeks because they talked about the Western Wall actually not being present in Israel, something which, of course, the Israelis...
Exactly. I mean, the geographic, everything, basically, you could wade into giant controversies just depending on where you're physically standing in Jerusalem. In this case, in the Old City, I mean, this cuts really to the core of a lot of those outstanding problems. If they ever, you know, manage to get, and Donald Trump says it's his express purpose to try to get both the parties back to the negotiating table, right? You know, we've basically had the Israeli-Palestinian peace process completely dead in the water, completely stalled. They totally collapsed in 1914. There's been no real direct contact between the Israeli prime minister and his Palestinian counterpart since 2010. So we're talking about 7 years now. And in this case, you know, one of the enduring issues when you see, now, like you said, they're in the area near the wall, not actually at the wall itself, at which point you would expect to see segregation of men and women there. But, you know, in the 1967 war, basically, you know, when the Old City was captured by Israel and subsequently annexed several years later in the Six-Day War, Israel sees Jerusalem as its eternal capital. And that has been a point on which they haven't really, right now, at least in their public pronouncements, haven't really budged. And the issue here, obviously, is that the Palestinians ultimately see at least the Old City, part of the Jerusalem, as their capital as well. This is one of the massive issues. As you know, as we see Donald Trump, you know, sort of walking over right now, I assume he's approaching the wall. We don't have the right perspective here.
Let me at this point actually bring in Iris Macklin, because Iris, our Jerusalem correspondent, and myself as a former Jerusalem correspondent, know very well that there is a separation of men and women. At this point, we're seeing images, Iris, of the women having been left behind as both Donald Trump, accompanied by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and the ultra-Orthodox rabbi, are getting closer to the wall. What exactly... what else is going to happen while he's here at this historic location?
What we're seeing at the moment is that gender division, and the women have reached the actual wall first, and they've had an explanation first from the rabbi of the Western Wall, what they're going to see, what its meaning is. Now the women, Melania and Ivanka, are having an explanation on their side of the wall, and Trump is standing on the other side of the wall with the Western Wall rabbi and another rabbi, and they're explaining to him where he is, what it means, what prayers you make here, what its historic significance is.
How long is he expected to stay at this location, Iris?
It's not clear how long they're expected to stay, because nothing has been to schedule so far today. The plane landed, they landed half an hour late. They were delayed at the airport by well-wishers, a meeting that wasn't meant to take place with Israel's cabinet. So everything is a little bit out of kilter today. And since there is the possibility of prayer, you know, Jewish people pray there, and so do many non-Jewish visitors. It's regarded as a spiritual place. This is a private visit, so it really is up to them to say how long they want to stay, what it means to them. Here we see in front of us Donald Trump actually approaching the walls, putting his hand on those ancient stones. They're very smooth down the bottom, where hundreds of people for thousands of people for hundreds of years have put their hands there and prayed there. And he is doing that. Normally, when people who are not the President of the United States go, it's very crowded. It's been completely cleared of people so that he can have this private moment of prayer at this site that is holy for Jews. And so we see his wife on the other side, her hands also on these ancient stones. We see the President of the United States putting a note in the wall. This is something that you do, a note you write for God, a wish that you have that you want fulfilled. The last time that we saw an American president do this, before he was the president, when he was just a candidate, Barack Obama did this, and someone then found the note, took it out, and published what he'd written. So they are hoping, they say, that that won't happen, that this note will remain private between Donald Trump and God.
Now, this is the first ever serving American president to visit the Western Wall, or the Kotel, as it's known in Hebrew. And, of course, as you pointed out there, Ira, security being a primary consideration, primarily because it's overlooked by the Temple Mount, the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, of which, of course, that has been a location for many clashes between Israeli troops and Palestinians. I imagine the whole of the old city is in lockdown as we speak, Iris.
The whole of the old city is in lockdown, and in fact, Donald Trump and his party opted to walk from where they were along a route that they had erected 8-metre screens along that route so that no one could see them, that no one, all stalls closed, all people who live there either inside their houses are actually told to leave. And along that route we saw CCTV footage of him in splendid isolation, something you never see because people actually live in the old city. There are always, even at night, people scurrying home along those ancient paths. And of course there are tourists and pilgrims. Today completely empty, in lockdown, in fear that this actually is the most sensitive spot, the most difficult spot to police, and it is believed that there is
That's a hell of a name.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Badlands, Badlands Media. My name is Matthew Trump, and this is the Wednesday night lineup, our primetime lineup. I'm coming to you live and from my home here in Arizona and speaking with my audience. I've been in the chat with people during the opening clips there, which I'll talk about in a minute. But let's just address the elephant in the room. The title of tonight's broadcast, which I chose over the weekend, is something I knew would be a little bit, provocative, at least in the sense that it's probably not the type of title that would be in a lot of my shows, at least not over the last 6 months or so. As you know, I've settled into talking a lot about cultural issues and history, but enough about that. Let's get into what we're going to talk about. So I was in the chat. I see a lot of my regulars here, and I have to admit that I really I was glad a lot of you showed up, because it's, I sort of dove in with this topic. I came up with the title, and then I thought, that's a little too strong, even though I always have sort of a twist on things. Did you think I was going to open up with a clip from the trailer? So that was started up with the trailer from Showa. So let's just get into that. So some of you were asking about the, here we go. So to the slides, and I'm going to leave the slides on. I'll leave them on. Let's see if I can make them bigger. I'm not going to do that. There we go. It's a little bigger. Let's see. Does that work well? You didn't think I was going to start off with the Holy Roman Emperor, did you? Okay. But let's start off with this. Okay. Before we'll talk about Showa in a minute. This came up. This is just a random slide. My slides are very disorganized tonight, so I'm just going to pick through them. They're just sort of like notes. Oh, I could talk about this because, well, subject matter is a little heavy, right? So just by the title, right? Let's admit that. Evening, friends. Rad for Liberty. Many of you know that World War II history has been my hobby and an ardent student for decades. The Holocaust, very quieting. Yeah, quieting. That's, I was afraid nobody would show up with the chat. It was so quieting. So why Joseph II, Holy Roman Emperor, you ask? Why is a Holy Roman Emperor from the 18th century? So he looks like he lived around the same time as, say, the dates that come to mind are Benjamin Franklin. He shared a lifespan with Benjamin Franklin. Franklin lived longer, but I think Franklin died in 1790. You know, being an American, I happen to know vital dates of our founding fathers. But he was born before 1741. 1740s, yeah, that's when the seeds of American liberty are taking place. So he was Holy Roman Emperor from 1765. So that's sort of early American revolutionary writings are happening then. And sole ruler of the Habsburg monarchy from the 29th of November, 1780 to his death. He was the oldest son of Empress Maria Theresa and her husband, Emperor Francis I, and the brother of Marie Antoinette. He was Marie Antoinette's brother. Leopold, also the brother of Leopold II, Maria Carolina of Austria, and Maria Amalia, Duchess of Parma. He was thus the first ruler in the Austrian dominions of the Union of the Houses of Habsburg and Lorraine. Habsburg-Lorraine. All right, I didn't know any of that, but I will tell you this about him. I learned when I was in Europe 2 years ago from a very good source that in Prague to this day, in the city of Prague to this day, on the, I think it's the birthday, March 13th, of Joseph II, Holy Roman Emperor. It could be a later Habsburg Emperor. I couldn't remember which one, but I think this might be the one. It may be the later one for like the 19th century. So it's either this or one of the later ones. In any case, they toast the Holy Roman Emperor on his birthday, and they sing the national anthem of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. The Jews of Prague do this to this day, the Jews that are left in Prague. And so did you expect that? I wouldn't have expected that. So why do they do that? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But he is sort of revered as somebody who helped the Jews. Holy Roman Emperor. All right. So at the beginning was a clip, was the trailer, the original theatrical trailer from Showa, which was a movie that came out in 1985, peak of civilization, 1985, my favorite year. I went to Europe that year. I was in some of these areas of the world that year, and I was a young backpacker, and I was just had all the strength of a young man, and I slept anywhere that there was room for my body on the ground. You know, I had that kind of summer. It was so wonderful. Spent like less than $1,000 for the whole summer because you could do that back then. I have a friend from Poland I met then. So this is about Poland. So this is, I would say this is probably the most well-known movie that is a documentary about the Holocaust in the sense of featuring survivor accounts. So it's 9 hours long, edited down from much longer length of footage from people, Jews and otherwise, who were alive at the time, who have remembrances of Poland and the certain camps there. And this was a really big deal when it came out in the 80s. And I would say that this, between this movie and then Schindler's List came out in 1993. Y'all remember Schindler's List. I would say that was peak Holocaust in the country. That was when, do you agree? What, those of you who are alive at the time, maybe you would say it, that this was the time when the narrative of the Holocaust being something that was important to remember, not only to remember, but to place as the centerpiece of the narrative of the post-war world. This was promoted in movies and on television and in the media, the importance of remembering the Holocaust and commemorating it, remember what happened. I think between the time Shoah came out in 85 and Schindler's List in 93 was the peak of that awareness. And it's been, of course, it has to ebb at some point because the survivors die off and it's just not as vivid without people who were alive at the time. And now we're down to people who were very, very young, who were even in the camps. And let's stipulate there were camps. Let's stipulate that. I think that we all agree there were camps. And here I'm going to get into trouble. Here's where I get into trouble. I got called hateful at the end of the last week's broadcast in the chat, by the way. I probably deserved it. I'll explain why. I thought I would get called hateful by like Muslims or Protestants or something. I'm a Protestant, but you know, it's just like evangelicals maybe. I don't know. But it was over my discussion of the Israeli Independence War. And I got called hateful for that, which was like, yeah, finally I'm getting called hateful. I must be having an impact. So I decided to come back. I'm a glutton for punishment. So I came back for more this week. So peak Holocaust, yeah, between 85 and 93. And then it's been ebbing and ebbing. And then there was this past week. And so I've been following America closely my whole life. I've had an awareness of public events my whole life. It's everybody has a talent. Everybody has a thing. Mine was following current events when I was like 5. And so that takes in the late 60s even, you know. And I'm obsessed with following the winds of how Americans feel about their own country has been sort of something I've been aware of, a fascination of that since that time. And so I had liberal parents, but we grew up in the conservative area. And at one point in a very conservative small town where we had the class election and I was the only person who voted Democratic, the rest. And so I was not surprised. I was totally not surprised because I knew America. I knew the kids there, but it really showed me what America was like back then. And of course, now I miss that time, you know. But so that's my specialty. And I would say, to get back to my point, this past week, you saw it at the end of last week's broadcast on this show, when I got called hateful, when I was talking about Israel, right? I was talking about the temple. And I don't think I said anything too obnoxious there. I did say that there was, you know, that the theory that the temple was elsewhere is still a little weak. I would say it's a little weak, and there's good reasons the temple was in the place where people think it is. You know, I just want to go with what is. You know, what the truth, and just the truth. I think we can handle the truth. Can we handle the truth? You know, and I'm not implying what the truth is by that. I'm not saying we've been lied to and the truth is something else and you know what I mean. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, can we just handle truth about things? Can we handle it? And so this past week, at the end of the show, like many of you maybe knew going into the show, but I didn't, that the House had passed that bill. You know the bill I'm talking about, right? The House had passed the bill that said that certain classes of speech in federally in the U.S. would be subject to Title VI violations concerning definitions of anti-Semitism. You all know what I'm talking about. All of you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. And right away, of course, we need to know what that law is, right? So, like many of you, I've learned not to get too carried away with the reaction about anything, but to go look and see what it says. What did it actually say? It did not criminalize. It wasn't going to put people in jail. Well, they can put people in jail for anything. Let's face it. So, but it, on the surface, it wasn't supposed to put people in jail like hate speech laws, like they have in other countries. In other countries, it's illegal to, it would be illegal to talk about some of the things we're going to talk about on the show tonight. It's flat out illegal. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not my problem to think about that. Because if we limit ourselves, if we put that mental filter on, which I think a lot of us have had mental filters on about what we allow ourselves to talk about. Many of you haven't. God bless all of you. I got a lot of people in my audience who have never compromised on what their opinions are. I can tell. I just know some of you, and you guys are impeccable, and you give me courage. I was not always been that way. I'm sort of a little wuss when it comes to keeping my head down. I always figure it's that's not my role. I've more the mentality of a spy. I've always had that. My grandfather was a spook, and it's sort of a family tradition. And so I have the mentality of blend in. You're going to be more useful that way. That's sort of been my mentality. But thank God there for all of you who were speaking up about things along the way. So this past week, there was that law. So what it did, it said that it's that thing about federally supported money. Like if the federal government gives money to colleges, then they're required to do certain things. They're required to jump through certain hoops. And in this case, the hoops will now be things like saying that, quoting certain passages from the Bible, I guess. Well, if you're a faculty at a university, it's going to get your institution into hot water. So it's a really, but who cares what it actually does, right? The perception, what was the perception of the law, of that passage of that bill? What was the perception? Perception was that a certain foreign country is really now running our country and probably has been for a long time, right? And that we've been hearing that the Congress is bought out and will do anything. We've seen it in the sense of the funding. At least that's the public perception. Now, you may disagree that that's not what happened, but the public perception is that essentially it has become that the U.S. Congress is essentially owned by Israel. So if it was part of the strategy, if it is, and it was part of Israel's strategy to sort of keep that on the down low, it's no longer on the down low. Now, maybe, you know, that's anti-Semitic. That's Jew hatred to say something like that. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm telling you how people are feeling out there because I can read America. I can read America. and it's turned. The Holocaust is over in the sense of the Holocaust era, and the era of the Holocaust being the center narrative of the West. And you may not like that fact. You may hate it. You may hate me for saying it. Fine. Don't care. It's true that it's not at the center of the Western narrative anymore. And it never will be again. We live in the post-Holocaust era, finally. Now, the degree to which you dread this or you look forward to this, that's up to you. But it's true. I don't think you can argue against that. So I don't think I'm saying anything controversial at all, unless it's controversial to state what is. Right? Okay. Yes, I agree with that too, Bear Bielsis. Yeah, they just, he's in reference to some. Thank you, Rose Thistleart. I got a few amens in there. Thank you. I know a lot of you know what I'm talking about. And maybe there's people out there that says, yes, Matt, we know what you're talking about. You just put on your swastika. Yeah, you just revealed yourself as whatever. Okay, fine. Ah, you got me. What can I say? I'm just a kid from the Midwest. I come from the country they call the Midwest. That's a Jew wrote that. Yeah, right? Famous Jew. Famous post-war Jew. Famous baby boomer Jew. Not Silent Generation, I think. Maybe we'll hear that song later. Shoah. So it was 9 hours long. It came out in the theaters. Hardly anybody saw it because it was 9 hours long. But everybody talked about it, and it was nominated for an Oscar, but it didn't win, probably because it was 9 hours long. But nevertheless, it started the post-Holocaust era. We just had a Holocaust. Did you know there was a Holocaust? I went to look for it because I couldn't remember the title, Shoah. It's the name in Hebrew for the Holocaust. Evidently, supposedly. So there was a Holocaust movie that was nominated for Academy Award this year. The Zone of Interest. Did anybody see this movie? I hadn't even heard of this, but I don't follow movies anymore. The idea of following movies is repugnant to me. Jews wrote most of the Christian hymns. Okay. The spiritual Israel is eternal. Secular Israel is dying. Where are you seeing this hate from? It's not in the chat. We agree with you. Oh, no. Sammy, I didn't mean you guys at all. But This show is going to, you know, with the title, it's going to, I'm also talking to people who may stumble upon this a couple days from now. And the title is going to bring in certain people who are going to, I know. I could tell, because that's the way it happens on the internet. Or not. maybe I'm such a tiny voice that nobody will even be bothered by this. No, Sammy, you guys, I love you all. I only get love from you. There's nobody negative in the chat. If someone shows up, I almost feel honored. I was glad I finally got some pushback because they always say, unless somebody's, you know, really finding issue with what you're saying, you're probably not having that big of an impact. All right. You know what, though? We're deep into the show, and we do need to thank our sponsors for this week. Forgive me, sponsors, for things. You guys are all, I love you all. I love everybody. I love peoples of all nations. I love all nations, you know? I love Israel. I'd like to go visit Israel. I'd like to go there and travel. I've long wanted to do that. And I don't like traveling anymore. I used to love travel, like when I had the backpack and that trip. Man, I love travel. Oh, lived for it. Lived for it. And now it just feels like a big, it's like I'm just moving around on the surface of the earth. Part of it's that I have a more Christian awareness that eventually I'll have to leave this earth behind and not to get too attached to it and to think of the next life and the heavenly kingdom more than the earthly one, where the earth is beautiful. But that's part of it. That's part of the reason. But it's also just that travel's become more of a hassle. You know, it's just not what it used to be. Scott Adams. So did you all see his video? Oh, my gosh. Did you ever heard of Maurice Samuel? I have to do some ads, some sponsors here. Let's talk to our sponsors. They're wonderful sponsors. So the first, we start off tonight with Love Litters. Love Litters. I did upload Love Litters. Please tell me I did. Oh, I'm going to have to go play it. So we'll start with this one. So, we've got, are you ready to diversify your assets with Bitcoin? Introducing River, the official Bitcoin partner of Badlands Media, where you can navigate the world of Bitcoin with confidence. With River, you can buy Bitcoin like a pro. I am so into this. I got to check this out. With the assurance of being licensed and regulated right here in the United States, River assures your Bitcoin journey is smooth and secure with on-demand live support at your fingertips. River empowers you to grow your portfolio without any unwanted surprises and eliminates third-party custodians, putting you in control of your assets. Open an account with no minimum purchase requirement. You can get your Bitcoin journey started with just $1. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/river to create your River account today. That's badlandsmedia.tv/river. River, shaping the future of finance, one Bitcoin at a time. This was a tweet I saw today from, you've heard of Ghost of Based Patrick Henry. I saw this tweet today. It's very menacing kind of thing that probably looks anti-Semitic to a lot of people. Tonight's episode of Spellbreakers is also brought to you in part by, our friends at MyPillow. MyPillow. Gotta love MyPillow. Nope, this one.
I'm excited to announce we're having a huge MyPillow spring sale. And here's a few examples. Buy one of our MyPillow 2.0s, you get another MyPillow 2.0 absolutely free. Made with cooling technology, the best pillow ever just got even better. And this just in, 9 brand new colors and styles of our Percale bed sheets. They're made with the finest long staple cotton, and now you can save 50% or more. That's as low as $24.98. And for the first time this year, I'm bringing you our My Slippers and Sandals for as low as $25 a pair. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your MyPillow 2.0s. Buy one, get one free. Percale sheets as low as $24.98. My slippers and sandals as low as $25 a pair. And for a limited time, when you order $75 or more, your entire order ships absolutely free.
Okay, so we are back and... let's see. Guys, we got on such a roll. I need to do the sponsor that paid to be at the beginning of the broadcast. I don't know. Is it more expensive at the beginning than the end? Because it seems like the audience sometimes picks up rather than slows down. So, Love Litters. So they're a sponsor. Let's see. I gotta share the screen though because I didn't upload it to. I didn't do my due diligence. Shame on me. I try to, you know, above all, to take care of the sponsors. And Love Litters is a good sponsor, and we're gonna take care of them like we're supposed to. So let's see. I do need to share the screen. Stop that and share. what a commercial break in the middle of that subject, right? Well, okay. Where are we? Showa Love Litter. Here we go. All right. This is the on-the-fly way to do it. Attention all of you Badlanders with purring pals and feathered friends. Say hello to Love Litters. Love Litters, 100% pure kiln-dried wood, free from chemicals, and oh so kind to Mother Earth. No dust, no mess, and no toxins. Just a lightweight solution that's gentle on your wallet and even gentler in your home. Our biodegradable litter is crafted with the wood destined for landfills, giving it a new purpose in your pet's life. Cats love it. Our astounding formula works like magic to neutralize the notorious cat urine odor, keeping your home fine, fresh, and welcoming. Yes. For bird lovers, if you're a bird lover, it zaps moisture from bird droppings, crumbling them away, all the while being safe if pecked or ingested. For reptiles and critters, too, our mix is crafted to dilute the pine scent, ensuring all those little lungs stay happy and healthy. Plus, every 30-pound bag of Love Litters will last up to 6 months, saving you money. Transform your pet care routine today. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/litter. That's badlandsmedia.tv/litter. And breathe easy with a litter that loves your pets as much as you do. All right. Oh, all right. That didn't go so bad. I survived a little. I survived a little production crisis there. And then we'll go back and share the slides again because Mr. Kitty, he's nice, but we're going to switch back over to our topic tonight, which means I do need to go back to StreamYard and do present and then StreamYard, share the screen, and then window. Here we go. Menachem Begin. This is the guy that got me in trouble because I said, I remembered Begin. Y'all remember Menachem Begin if you were alive at the time. So he was a big deal, right, in the 70s and 80s, prime minister of Israel. You know, the whole shaking the Jimmy Carter and that. American worker, $5. Great thought-provoking topic. Thank you. Thank you so much, American worker. And there was one before I saw. One went by before. American worker. I love your name. I love your name. Let's see. There was one before that I missed. I saw it go by. I had it covered up by my maybe not. I thought I saw another one go by. Here it is. Sammy the Squirrel. All right. Thank you. $20. We all love the topics you picked for your shows, Matthew. My weekly support for the show. Sammy, you know, I needed you tonight as much as anyone else. My core regulars, I love all of you, even if you're new here. But I knew I needed certain of my regulars to shore up my self-confidence for even, you know, I threw the title out and I was like, I'd send it to Brad. I'm like, okay, it's done, you know. Of course I could, you know, change it, but I'm like, nah, I got it. See, I wasn't gonna do it. I had a much milder topic for this week lined up. I was going to continue our threads about ancient history. I know some of you like that, and I like it too. And I wanted to keep going forward, though. I wanted to cover the Crusades. So go skip ahead a couple hundred years, actually. Actually, a lot. There's a lot. It's a big difference between like 700 and 1000. And I love that era of history. So there's the Crusades. I have a great book about the Crusades, which is called Jerusalem Pilgrimage, 1099 to 1185. And it's a translation of accounts of Crusader pilgrims from that era during the First Crusade, during the time of the Kingdom of Jerusalem. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of people who use the Crusades as an example of the barbarity of the West and the deficiencies of the European soul. It's the behavior of the Christians during the Crusade, the Western Christians, the Franks and the Normans and the Anglo-Saxons and the Saxon Saxons and the Lombards and all of those Germanic tribes, and they were probably the worst examples of human behavior in history. Until the Holocaust, maybe, right? Well, there was the Spanish Inquisition too. That's the triple whammy against the West, right? Is the Crusades, the Inquisition, and the Holocaust. Because now, if you're Jewish or Israeli, I don't know how you're going to take hearing this, but this comes from an American guy, which is that it's my perception. It is my perception, right or wrong, that we Westerners are supposed to feel, including Americans, that all Western Christians, especially all Americans, are supposed to feel in some sense guilty for the Holocaust. Am I crazy for saying that? That it's not just Germany. That everyone in the West, all white people in the West, are somehow guilty of it. And there's many reasons why, but one of them is that, well, one of them is that, for example, Eisenhower knew about the death camps and they didn't bomb them because why? Well, because, you know, we Americans, we actually hate Jews just as much as the Germans do, you know, secretly. We just, you know, we have to fight the Germans because they were trying to invade other countries, you know, that. But we didn't really care that they were killing all the Jews. We were sort of, you know, there's so many Americans. And the reason I know this,
is because I've seen it. I've seen this expressed by Jews, by American Jews, that somehow there's a guilt by implication in all of the West for what happened to the Jews in Western Europe. And that's why all of the West has to die. America has to die because it's guilty of the Holocaust. Germany certainly has to die, but also America has to die, and all the nations of the West have to die because we're guilty of the Holocaust. Or if not that, we also are guilty of things we might do to the Jews, because inside all of us is a Nazi trying to get out. And all it takes is being activated. This guy taught me that. So he's Jewish. I actually love this guy's writing. I loved his books, The Geography of Nowhere. This is James Howard Kunstler. So he's New York. He's Jewish. I don't think by religion, but ethnicity. He wrote The Geography of Nowhere. I read this in the 90s when I was super into urban planning, and I was super into like walkable cities and how, you know, the suburbs were so awful. Post-war suburbs were just a horrible way of designing communities. And I was convicted of that notion, and I still am to a large degree, even though I live in a notorious suburban community that's, you know, one of the most notorious in America. I live in it because that's how life works, right? I loved his writings, and he had a blog, and he would write in The Atlantic about American culture, sort of me, but Jewish, I guess. So anyway, I love him. But he did say, he repeatedly would make remarks about how America, the people out in the hinterlands of America were nascent, you know, nascent Eichmanns and, you know, all that, that we were all just like the Germans, you know, just needed to be activated the right way and weaponized against the Jews. And then we would come for all the Jews in America, and we would do the same thing to them that the Germans had done to the Jews in World War II. He basically said that. His term was cornpone Nazis, is what he said. The marching of the boots of the cornpone Nazis in America. And I was like, you know what? That's, you know, screw you, buddy. That's, you know, Americans shed their blood to liberate Europe. Let's get that out. You know, my grandfather was in Italy. I don't know if he was at Anzio, but I think he got his Purple Heart somewhere along the Italian coast. I don't think he was at Anzio. I think he'd move further inland. But Anzio, you know, Anzio was a big battle on the Italian coast. 7,000 British, Americans, and Canadians died taking the beach. Because they took the beach, then the Germans sort of did that at Battle of the Bulge. They cut off the Allied forces, and the Allies sort of had to retake the beach that they had just taken. A lot of people died. And so that was February of 1944, that battle. And then, you know what? Italy was tough to take. In fact, the Allies never took it all. Do you know that? The Allies never conquered Italy militarily. The Germans actually held the line in Italy. That's what allowed a lot of them to escape through Trieste and Venice, because they held a foothold on the Adriatic as Germany proper was collapsing. So Italy's so mountainous, it's tough. That's why the Romans could build an empire out of it. A lot of people died. And so February 44, that was, you know what happened on the 1st of February 1944, though, is when Menachem Begin declared the revolt against the British in the British Mandate. See, up till then the Jews had been actually fighting alongside the British during what was called the Arab Revolt that started in 1936. And but in 44, in February of 1944, so the Wikipedia article says Begin, so the guy we were just looking at, Menachem Begin. So he was, Battle of Anzio, there we go. So there you can see where it is in Italy. So it took January 22nd, 1944, stretched into February because they had to retake the beach. I will toast to Joseph, Roman Emperor, or any of the Roman Holy Roman Emperors, and especially for the liberation of the Jews. So what he did was he let the Jews out of the, said they didn't have to stay in the ghetto anymore. And so the Jews were free to leave. And that's why when I went to Prague in 2002, when I went to Prague in 2022, excuse me, it's 2 years ago. And I was at a conference and there's a lot of Israelis there. I have a lot of Israeli colleagues, love them all. Love to go visit them in Israel in peace. I'm not going to do it now, you know, but I'd love for there to be peace there. There's some old guys, some people that I don't think they old enough to be Holocaust survivors, but they're close to, some of them are old enough, but I don't think they were. And I'd like to go visit them, sure. February of 1944 is when Menachem Begin and the, what is that organization called that he belonged to? Moshe Dayan. Wow, what a badass he was. Israeli defense minister. So he was a general commanding the forces in the 48 war. And then he later was the defense, the head of defense during the like the Yom Kippur War. And that's when he said the third temple is in danger. And it's when he said the Golda Meir. Menachem Begin. So before the state, the creation of the state of Israel, he was the leader of the Zionist military group, Irgun. So Irgun. We'll talk about them, but not more tonight, probably. But we'll get around to talking about them. We'll have to go into the history of Israeli of the Israeli independence war, right? We hardly know anything about it as Americans. The Israelis know all about it. He proclaimed a revolt on the 1st of February, 1944, against the British mandatory government, the Mandate of Palestine, which was opposed by the Jewish Agency. As head of the Irgun, he targeted the British in Palestine. Later, the Irgun fought the Arabs during the 1947-48 Civil War in mandatory Palestine. And as its chief, Begin was described by the British government as the leader of the notorious terrorist organization. Well, British. All right. So that'd be the time frame of Exodus. So we saw the scenes from the movie Exodus. That was 1960. And the book came out in 58. And a lot. And just to, when I say the Holocaust became the center narrative of the West. That actually didn't happen right after the war, right? It took a while for that to happen. There's Ivanka at the wall. There's Trump's signature in the guest book at the wall. At a Holocaust memorial. This isn't the note he put in the wall. You think they didn't take it out and read it? And do you think Trump knew that they would? Like he could write a personal note, you know, like the Jeb note. Yosef Hof is the Jewish quarter of Prague. And we took a tour of this with my Israeli colleagues. They wanted to tour this. We always take a tour on our, but I was thinking it was all going to be about the Holocaust and it's going to be sad and all these people were taken away and they're killed. And I'll get to that, but no, that's not what happened. What happened was by the time the Germans invaded in 1938, the Jewish quarter of Prague was just an abandoned dump. All the Jews had left. They didn't want to live there. They'd long since left. All that was left were the undesirable poorer Jews who were like it was the ghetto, you know? So I don't know if that's true in other ghettos, but in Prague that was true because they were liberated by decree of the Holy Roman Empire. So there wasn't a lot of people there left. But after, even in its decline, it was sort of a bohemian hangout, like Kafka hung out there. So we went, we saw the Spanish synagogue, which is in the photograph there, really nice. But it was Joseph II, Holy Roman Emperor, who emancipated the Jews with the Toleration Edict. in 1781. I think it's a later emperor that they toast, now that I think about it. But they could toast him too. And they sing the Austro-Hungarian national anthem of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. How cool is that? That's wickedly righteous. I love that. Because, well, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So the Holy Roman Empire ended in 1806. So after that was the Austrian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And the Austro-Hungarian Empire was not what you think. We got to do a show about the Austro-Hungarian Empire sometime. Mom of Two, always love your show. $20. Thank you, Mom of Two. Especially you got the two kids, and I appreciate it. Two times 10, $20. I like it more than I admit. You know, the money that comes in is a bonus, but just the fact that people would do that is so wonderful. Eleanor 2000, love your discussions on the array of topics. Great book. Hannah Arendt's Eichmann in Jerusalem, a report on the banality of evil, recounts 1961 trial of Nazi official. A hard read though. You know, I was gonna get a clip of Hannah Arendt for the beginning, but I thought, what can I show at the beginning? It sort of came together. Shoah, Exodus. So Exodus, I wanted to make a point about that, which was that in 1960, when that came out, that movie was not about the Holocaust. That movie, Paul Newman, Lee J. Cobb, as people said, that was about the Israeli independence. That was about Israeli independence. But the public did not yet have a consciousness much of the Holocaust. There was a movie, though, that brought public consciousness about the Holocaust. That was The Pawnbroker in 1964, where Rod Steiger actually plays a Holocaust survivor, or a survivor of the camps. Can we just describe what he's a survivor of the camps. And he becomes a pawnbroker in Harlem, and he struggles with life. But it's made explicit that he is a survivor of the camps in Europe. So that's 1964. So that really is when the public started to have we're going to have an awareness of this, not just among Jews. Eleanor, thank you. Hannah Arendt, yeah, thank you. Good for pointing that out. Let's see who else. All right. Hello, hiking cat lady. The return button on my phone gets me every time. I end up sending them my messages before I finish writing. Yeah, doing that at work is really awkward sometimes too. So The Pawnbroker, Rod Steiger, he's nominated for Academy Award. This came out this year. I'd never heard of it. Josef Hoff was abandoned before the Nazis arrived, which is sort of weird. But there is a Holocaust there at the old Jewish cemetery, which has graves of rabbis and wealthy Jews going back to, I want to say, the 17th century at least. There is, to get into the cemetery on the tour, you have to go through the memorial to all of the has the names of Jews of Bohemia. So that basically the modern Czech Republic, a little bit smaller than that area, who died during the war, I guess, would be the most accurate way of saying it. By whatever means. So there's quite a bit of names. I don't know how many names are there. And this is what I wanted to share. Something happened to me there that was sort of profound, which was I was with one of my colleagues. I won't say who. He's a really great guy. I love him. He's Israeli. He was born American. He was an American. He was a New York Jew. I think he was born in Brooklyn. And when I say New York Jew, he was like, he's sort of a New York Jew. And he looks like something out of, that you would, in more than one ways, he's almost lived Fiddler on the Roof. But he's a baby boomer. He's older than me. And he had the politics of a New York Jew, a liberal in the 1960s. And even he would admit that, But the thing about is if you were a Jew in the 1960s and you were a liberal, if you were an American like Patty Hearst or the Symbionese Liberation Army, you had to just play act at being a soldier. But if you were a Jew, you could actually go to Israel and actually be a soldier and carry real guns and be part of an army and feel righteous about it. And so he did that. He emigrated to Israel, got Israeli citizenship, had to serve in the Israeli army, met an Israeli woman, married her, had kids, I love him. I love him. And I was standing, and Ben, and I think he probably knows I'm a Trump supporter, but there's also a lot of Israelis in this organization. They're all physicists. So we're all physicists. And, you know, a lot of them love Trump. So if you're a Trump hater and you're Israeli and you're liberal, you know that a lot of people around you who are older Jews than you and have more claim at some kind of moral authority, whatever, they like Trump. In fact, I know that from firsthand because I was, you know, I got the warmest reception about my name ever from an Israeli wearing ultra-Orthodox gear. And at that same conference, I got crap from an American who, the worst insult about my name. They both happened within like 20 minutes of each other. So these names on the wall, my colleague said something to me I'll never forget. He was talking about these names and he said, he was explaining to me what he thought was the overwhelming feeling. He said, what feeling do you think that I as a Jew and people like me get when we see this? I think he asked me that. What feeling do you imagine we have? And I thought about it and I said, I don't know. And so he said, here's the answer. Shame. We feel shame. That's the feeling. That's what I feel. And that's what a lot of Jews feel when they see this. They feel ashamed. It's like, whoa, that's not what I expected. That's deep, man. That's deep. And you know what? That explains a lot. That explains a lot. Now I sort of get it a little bit more, I think. You know, there was a movie like came out in 2009 with, what was that night? Liev Schreiber, you know? And it was about, he was leading a armed Jewish revolt in like the Polish-Lithuanian era against the Nazis. I don't know, it's sort of quasi-historical. I think it's called Defiance. It's a good movie. I like Liev Schreiber. He's a good actor. I like the movie. That was when I was seeing every movie that came out. And but it's about an armed revolt of Jews against, I don't know if that happened. But that's sort of like, well, we didn't fight back. Why are we ashamed? He said, because we didn't. We were powerless. So we didn't and couldn't fight back against this. And said, I get it. But that movie about Liev Schreiber, it's about a bunch of Jews fighting back. But here's the irony. This is what got me into trouble last week. Is I pointed out this irony. Can we say at least this ironic that that wasn't happening to any real degree. Like we thought we would, because otherwise the Jews wouldn't feel ashamed. But there was, at the same time, an armed revolt against the British who were fighting the Germans. It's ironic. That's ironic. Would you agree? It's ironic. I think it's ironic. So Exodus, by 1960, people still didn't think about the Holocaust. By 64, they did. By 83, with Shoah, it's in full swing. You know, everybody's talking about the Holocaust by the 80s. I want to say that maybe the peak Holocaust, I want to say, was in 1988. That's right in the middle of that time span. And exactly in the middle. And it peaked right in November of 1980 with the airing of the miniseries War and Remembrance, which was a miniseries that it was the sequel to The Winds of War, which had been an earlier miniseries, both based on books, epic books about World War II. But in War of Remembrance, I saw that. That was when you got three channels on the TV and you had to use a coat hanger. And I was living in an apartment in Salem, Oregon, and I had no furniture except I had a milk crate and a television that I bought at a used TV store. And I set it up and I got the stations from Portland and I watched whatever was on, you know? The 1988 World Series was really good, man. Kirk Gibson, I watched that live sitting on the carpet, bare carpet of my apartment. And I watched The Winds of War, which came on, and it was just blew me away. There's a scene in there where you have the people arriving at, I want to say, at Auschwitz. And it just follows a group of people arriving until they go into the gas chambers. And by say that, I mean, those are what they are in the film. They're depicted as places where people go in and receive poisonous gas that kills them. is how it's depicted in the movie, I think. But so I'm describing the story, and so that happens, but it all happens over about 10 minutes, and you just fall in, and there's no dialogue. It's just people, you know, whimpering. It's women naked, whimpering and screaming. It's really poignant. I really recommend it as perhaps the best, most the sort of horrifying depiction of the arrival of prisoners at the camps and their fear. Because who wouldn't be afraid? Who wouldn't be terrified? And so that was 1988. It was really great, super. I don't know if anybody else saw that, remembers that from, and I just happened to catch it because I had nothing else to do but watch television in my apartment and finish my classes so I could graduate. Of course, Schindler's List, Warsaw Ghetto, different than the Holy Roman Emperor, Gollum, okay, Moshe Dayan, Badass, we'll talk about him sometime. White Paper of 1939, that's of his important in Israeli history. 1936-39, Arab Revolt in Palestine, that's important. The London Conference of 1939, that's important. You all know about the Balfour Declaration, I'm sure. Everybody knows about that. 1917 Declaration of the British, that they were, His Majesty's government is in favor of the establishment of a, I don't know the exact wording at that point, but effectively a Jewish state in Palestine. One of the Rothschilds, which one? I don't know. The letter was addressed to him. Was addressed to him as a letter from the one of the cabinet members of His Majesty's government. All right, should know that Haganah organization that was the basically the Jewish resistance forces during the Israeli War of Independence, Jewish insurgency in Mandatory Palestine. You can see there's so many things to know about, and I hardly even begin to scratch the surface, but it is over. The Holocaust, it is over. It's over. That law just blew it away. So, you know, and I want to say that I don't even know what the reason for that law was. It's almost like can we just say that we're at a time in history when something happens like that, you have to look at. There's sort of the official reason for doing it, for the official reason for the law. What's the official reason for these campus protests right now, these Palestinian protests? Why are they happening? There's the surface reason. We all know the surface reason. Oh, the kids are angry about the war in Palestine. But you have to have said, what's the effect? Qui bono? What's the effect? What winds up being the effect of this? Is it more sympathy for the Palestinians? No, I don't think so. Not at all. So then you start asking questions. Well, what's really the agenda here? Why are they really happening then? And it's the same with this law. You know, what was the effect of the law? Was it you know, something that, oh, we're all gonna, yes, we will crack down on speech and campuses that implicates Israel in negative things about historical things and about Jesus. Yes, let's do that. Is that the reaction, or is it more like, well, I could play you. Maybe you've seen it. Did you see Scott Adams' reaction? I mean, that's when I saw Scott Adams' reaction, where is it? It's this, you know, there it is. Scott Adams freaks out at IHRA Israel hate speech laws, and Mark Levin defends them with John Hagee. So Scott Adams is sort of like, you know, he's Mr. Middle Brow, Middle Ground, right? And people hated him because he was seemingly not anti-vaccine, if I can say that right, et cetera, et cetera. But I think he's a genius. He knows how to steer people. He's moving people in a big herd. And he just let loose about hate speech law in a way that's, let's just say, you know those comments he made about black people? Nobody's even going to remember them now. Barbie L, great show always, thought-provoking. Okay, did I read yours already? Barbie L, all you people are so wonderful. I hope I'm, I hope I'm the chat's still moving. Maybe I need to exit out and make it come back because I don't. Now we get feedback. Is it paused? Is that what's going on? Okay. But yeah, here was some more chat. Yeah, here we are. Palestinians or Semites. You know, this show is called Spellbreakers, and we're trying to break a whole bunch of spells at once here. So, and I know I'm not doing a very good job all in all, but it has changed. Things have changed. Why that law was passed, what's going to come out of it, but the era of the Holocaust is over as far as it being the central narrative of the West. And that's just the way it is. So let me see. I'm not sure I covered. I don't want to leave without sort of, let's see. Do I have any other things to say? I got a lot of other things to say. I guess maybe they want to build another canal through and to get past the Suez Canal, but have it go through Gaza. I saw this was a tweet from somebody today, because I show these tweets. The reason I'm showing these tweets is not to say, oh, I agree with what Ghost of Base Patrick Henry says here and that this diagram here is represents. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that all of a sudden, people seem to feel free to express certain opinions they didn't before. Don't you agree? The people sort of feel like, you know what? The water's okay. I'm going in. And this probably is scaring a lot of Jews because this is like, we knew, like James Howard Kunstler. Oh man, he must be freaking out right now. The cornpone Nazis are on the march. I don't want to go back to his blog. I used to read his blog like 20 years ago. So I was an early Kunstler fan. Kunstler means artist in German, actually. Moshe Dayan. Golem. Golem is the Golem of Prague. They made a movie out of it in 1920. So it's this clay figure that's the magical that the rabbi creates and it gets out of hand and starts to destroy everything. Thomas Wichter. Do you know Thomas Wichter? You know Thomas Wichter. So I think about him a lot. I was thinking about him. I'll just wrap it up with Thomas Wichter. And then I have one last thought. Thomas Wichter. So Wichter, I started following Tom. You know, he was on Twitter and he wrote a lot of stuff and he would write long threads and they would basically, this was starting around the 2016 election when Trump was just running for president the first time. And Wichter would come out with these long threads, basically castigating Trump supporters for being weak-kneed. He's like, you guys don't realize Trump's got this. He's gamed this all out. He knows what he's doing. He's got an arc. He's going to go through a three-act structure where he wins, then the hero has to suffer his downfall, and then he comes back. And he just explained it all. And anytime people would be like, oh, no, it looks like Hillary's going to win, or it looks like Ted Cruz is going to get the nomination, he'd be like, you idiots. No, that's not going to happen. And he sort of explained Trump to me in a way that I get now, who Donald Trump was, that Trump early on in his life knew what his mission in life was, which was to bring down the evil people who killed John F. Kennedy and other people. And that somehow he arranged his life to be able to do that. And he's our guy in the elite working for us. And he's had to use deception. He had to create the persona of the Donald. And he follows the Sun Tzu. And it's very, and so Wichter explained all this and he was brilliant. And he would write these long threads on Twitter and sort of, shoring people up. He was like a drill sergeant. He reminded me like of the bad sergeant in platoon. It's like, stop being so wussy. I called him Sergeant Wichter, So he's brilliant. He's an autist. He lives somewhere in Southern California. I'm using his name a lot. He doesn't like that, but sorry, Thomas. But the one thing about Thomas was that he hated anti-Semites. He thought anti-Semites were the lowest of the low. And Jew haters. He hated Jew haters. he was a hater of Jew haters, and he talked about it. And he said people who are anti-Semitic, it's a deficiency of the mind, and once you go down that route, you're open up to all sorts of other kinds of mental illnesses. And so he was very forthright about this, and he had no tolerance for anything sympathetic with the Palestinians who were deceptive and were willing to lie and kill their own people to make Israel look bad. And so that was his consistent message, along with the other stuff about Trump. And the stuff about Israel, I was like, oh, okay, dude, whatever. But I love this. Mostly he wrote about Trump, which was great. And then one day, so he had no tolerance for Jew hatred. And then one day, this is what happened to Thomas Wichter, is that one day he wrote a thread in which he basically, he came out and said, I can't believe it. He basically said, you know what? I know a lot of Jews. I know a lot and in some sense, they do everything they can to bring this negative images on them. And the reactions against them are sort of, in a way, sort of justified by, it's almost like they want people to feel, to hate them. They're comfortable with that, he said. I can't remember what it was exactly. You know what? You know why? I don't know. Because I wish I'd screenshotted it, because it was Wichter who went months and months and months talking about Trump. Nothing happened to him on Twitter. He wrote that one thread, and 2 days later, his account was banned. There's no more Thomas Wichter. And I was just sitting there with my jaw. It's just like, did everybody else? First of all, that Wichter had written that original thread blew me away. And then that he was banned immediately from it, that totally red-pilled me. I was like, whoa. Now, of course, Twitter is different now. And times are different. Now everybody can basically say the things that are being said because there's too many people saying them. You know, it's like, I am Spartacus, you know? Of course, they could take out any one of us. But, you know, there's so many. Most of us are just small fries. I'm a small fry. I'm a nothing. I'm just a little small fry, like a little rabbit. Wichter is the first to discuss devolution. Yes, I should mention that. Even John would admit this. Wichter came up with devolution theory. And then Wichter basically lasted until January 20th, 2021. And then bang. He basically fulfilled whatever he was. Some people think he was working for Mossad or the CIA the whole time and he was being handled. Thomas, I am not saying anything that isn't commonly discussed. So if it's wrong, don't blame me. It's out there. That's a thing. I'm sure you know. So he would hate me for pointing it out, though. You know, good old Thomas Wichter. Let me just close with this. So the era of the Holocaust is over as the defining narrative of the West, and we're living in a world in which that's just happening. But I just want to say, for the record, to me it doesn't really matter the number. Whether it's in the millions, like 6 million, even if it's only 100,000, even if that was the truth, it was 100,000. And even if it was mostly from disease and starvation and physical abuse, even if that's true, even if that were true, it's still one of the worst crimes in history. It's still worthy of being labeled as such, and the people being mourned over that. I think so. You know, you may not agree with me, but that's the way I look at it. Does the number have to be a certain number to be so beyond imagination, so that we always keep it like, oh, this is the, we have to think of it as the worst thing that ever happened in history? Because this, I don't know. But you know what? If I'm thinking that, there's a lot of people thinking it. I don't really have very many original thoughts. I've learned. If I'm saying something, a lot of people out there are saying it. So it doesn't matter the number. It's still one of the worst crimes in history. And the people who ran the camps are still, they're barbarous and they deserve what they got. And we Americans, though, are not responsible for that. I'm not going to buy that. I will not buy that. And I do not believe we are cornpone Nazis ready to march. know, that was just an early, you know, this is all Trump supporters are Nazis. Like, we're the guys that would fight the Nazis today if they came back. Aren't we? We'd have the gumption to actually say, you know what? It's time to take up arms. We would. Maybe they did take over. I don't know. You know, the whole thing, Operation Paperclip, all that. Oh, yeah. So tonight's episode of Spellbreakers has been brought to you in part by one more. Oh, we got the good ranchers here. Let's bring in our last sponsor, and then we'll wrap up for the night. And so our last sponsor of the night is, oh, Good Ranchers. Cows. Gotta love cows.
T-bone.
Good.
Chicken.
Good.
Bacon.
Good.
Salmon.
Good.
Ground beef.
Good.
Ribeye.
Good.
Ranchers.
Good.
Ranchers.
Good Ranchers delivers the best meat and seafood America has to offer. And we ship it straight to your door from real farms and ranches right here in the USA. So whether it's beef, chicken, pork, or seafood, you know it's going to be
good.
Ranchers.
Good.
Ranchers.
Good. All right. Well, thank you all who are all still with me for this show. I know, you know, not everybody can watch the whole show, but I hope that people who usually stay did stay to the end. And I hope some of you come back next week. We will talk, you know, I think we are at a time when a lot of things are happening. It shifts in the public mood. I'll talk about more of that next week. But this is just, this may be the big one that sort of releases a lot of stuff. I don't know. We're going to see. I don't know what I'm going to talk about next week. Well, I'll sign you out. We got Altered States coming up. Smash the thumbs up. Thank you. Thank you, Sammy, for reminding me to tell, to ask you, to beg you for a thumbs up like. Thank you. This was a show about American cultural history in real time. You're getting the views of somebody who's been obsessed with this his whole life. And in real time, I can tell when things are changing while they're changing. A lot of you can, too. I'm not unique. And they're changing big time. So thank you all for watching tonight. Have a good evening. I don't think if I have time, I'll send you out with some Jewish music at the end here too. But we're going to sign off with we want the close. That's what we want. Badlands outro.
Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video. And a special thank you to all of our advertising partners. Please remember to shift your dollars to support those businesses that support Badlands Media.
Among the aficionados of American folk music, the name Bob Dylan, I'm told, is murmured with hushed respect. He it was who wrote the now famous protest song called Blowin' in the Wind. He's just arrived here to sing at the Royal Festival Hall, and his latest protest is called With God on Our Side.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. Big country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there, the laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side. Ah, the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charge, the Indians. fair. The cavalry's charged, the Indians died. Ah, the country was young with God on its side. The Spanish-American wars had its day, and the Civil War too was soon laid away. And the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side.
Bob Dylan.